The next item on the agenda is regarding a proposal which has been made regarding the density trade ordinance. And I'll pass out a copy of the ordinance, which was previously approved. A proposal has been made to amend the, and this is just for discussion tonight, to amend the density trade ordinance. And this ordinance currently permits an increase in density for cluster developments in development zones if a proffer is made by the developer. The proffer amount of $15,000 or $20,000 per unit is in the current ordinance and is dedicated towards the purchase of open space or for parks and recreation. The proposal has been made to allow multifamily construction in cluster developments if it's part of the density trade ordinance. Currently, the ordinance only allows single-family homes in the clusters where the density trade ordinance applies. So,
it's getting worse.
The proposal also would increase the open space requirement from 30% to 40% if multifamily is in the cluster developments, which pay the density trade fee. So, this proposal and any is basically up for discussion tonight. If you have any thoughts on this, or
first, I'd love to just know who has proposed this.
I asked that it be put on the agenda.
Again, why?
I have a question, if you don't mind.
Somebody, please.
I just want to make clear that what's been handed out is the existing ordinance.
This is the existing ordinance.
This is not a proposed ordinance.
No, okay. This is just the existing ordinance that was passed 6 months ago, I guess, or
that just
year
wasn't,
ago.
That wasn't clear from your remarks.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It was brought to my attention that there was an opportunity to increase the amount of open space required in addition to creating more affordable housing if multifamily housing could be included in the cluster ordinance as long as it's in a designated development district. In addition, by doing so, the density trade ordinance would be more applicable and in turn could bring in revenue that could be used for conservation programs. That was the reason for considering this.
So, Vance, your proposal is to amend the existing ordinance instead of writing a new one, just amend this to include?
It would probably be best just to get a consensus that it's worth considering and then turning it over to our legal department to see
which is the
best way to go forward.
Does anybody have any thoughts about that other than Mr. Phillips down there? I mean,
well, I'm going to ask each councilman for their thoughts.
Well, I mean, it's just the first time I've seen this. It's difficult to figure.
Well, this is just for discussion tonight. We're not voting on anything.
Because it's in a single family home area now. Would this permit somebody to put multifamily now in this in a single family here without going through this other usual thing we go through, the change of zones?
It's a development district. Had to be a development district.
The development district would still have to go, it'd be a cluster, strictly a cluster only.
So somebody comes in for a cluster and you got a single family home area and people are assuming that the land that's vacant next to them is going to be single family homes because that's what it's zoned, but somebody could now come in and do some clustering and yet now, not just clustering single family, but now cluster some single family or all multifamily. This could be an all multifamily cluster now.
Is that
what I'm understanding?
Well, you have to ask me.
And is that what we want to see?
You couldn't increase density, could you, Mr. Phillips?
You couldn't in a straight cluster through the density trade ordinance if it's in a development district, which is in.
Were you guys talking to your mics a little closer?
The only way to increase density would be to use the density trade ordinance, which provides and actually encourages higher density in those development districts. And the only way you could increase that density is one, if you have the sewer capacity up to 4 units per acre, and two, you pay the fee of $20,000 or $15,000, depending on the location, to the county per additional unit above the current zoning. And then that money, of course, would go into an account that would be used for the preservation of open space in other areas in the county.
But so my concern is, again, we take the environmentally sensitive developing district, which is where 80% of the stuff that's happening and is occurring in this county. And so now we're going to encourage this higher density and more of this stuff, make it more attractive with multifamily, because multifamilies are cheaper to build. So you'll see probably a rash of those like we've seen everywhere in the environmentally sensitive district. I mean, it just overloads a district that can ill afford any more overloading. But is there a way that we could see Mr. Lank maybe show us sometimes how we've seen a drawing of what our old subdivision looked like and how cluster housing looked so attractive? Could we see what this would look like in some kind of drawings of somehow? You have the capabilities of doing something like that, Lawrence? Okay, I mean, maybe we ought to continue this discussion and have some show and tell so we can get a better feel of what we're talking about here today and what it may look like.
Right. Well, that's what this is for, Mr. Cole, just for discussion only. So.
Well, I know, but there's not enough to discuss, Dale, because I don't know what we're dealing with, because I don't like the ordinance to begin with, and I don't know if I like what we're proposing.
Well, we don't have an ordinance even before us.
No, I mean, I don't.
He didn't like this.
I don't like this.
Oh, okay.
The number, the thing we're working on.
Which have it for you? I have it for you, but it already exists.
Right.
We have had some conversation with Vince, and Vince, I think, talked to Jim, but Vince had a concern as whether or not multifamily can be included in the cluster ordinance, and he's felt it may be necessary to make it a conditional use. So we haven't worked out the
right. I mean, that's one of my first initial concerns. Are we doing something?
And it could be, the number of units could be a restriction placed on by council in the ordinance so that it doesn't get excessive like to 12. So typically the development districts or the environmentally sensitive especially tried to limit it to 4 units per acre.
I'm still wondering why anybody would develop under this ordinance when they can come in under our standard change of zone and get all this and not have to pay anything.
Well, that's just the point, Mr. Cole. You've been giving away density.
Me?
For nothing. Sure.
Please, excuse me.
This is an opportunity to begin to charge developers for the added density.
It's all about money, isn't it?
When that money goes to preserve open space in the county, I think it's a good thing to consider.
But really,
right now, the difficulty is that the AR district is strictly single-family residential.
Which is a nice way to keep it.
And the difficulty is that the multifamily can apply for conditional use in AR because they are falling to the old catch-all, I always say.
That's right.
A residential business or commercial use is more appropriately approved as a conditional use. So it is a provision they can apply. But if you make it a line item as a conditional use, then they wouldn't be able to apply for the catch-all. It would be strictly what that line item said, and you could specify that they had to proffer, just like you do in the cluster trait.
And if you make it a conditional use, it would then come to council, whereas if council. It's part of the subdivision ordinance, it would only go to the commission.
Right now, yeah, that's exactly right.
You said, Jim, it would only go to P&Z?
If it's part of the subdivision ordinance, which the cluster ordinance
right.
is, it would just go to the planning commission and not to council.
And it'd be the only other. Would they have the appeal process if they want?
If it were turned down.
Right. Or accepted.
The density trade ordinance is actually in this zoning ordinance. Under 115, not 99.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, back to the concept itself. By including multifamily housing, we, one, can make housing more affordable in the county. It gives us the ability to require a higher percentage of open space in the developments. We can include environmental standards. There's going to be nothing that says that just because they put multifamily in this development that they can forego the normal environmental standards that the county and the state requires. And we can also consider setbacks. By having multifamily housing on less land, we could set back the development 75 feet from the roadway, which would provide the opportunity for a landscaped buffer to shield the development from the roadway. That additional 75 feet could provide increased opportunities for DLDOT to widen the roads at some point.
Well, bring in an ordinance that has all those standards in it, and let's do it, because all you're doing is saying what we could do, and we never do it. It never gets done. So it sounds good, and I've yet to see you really support any of that kind of stuff, but let's bring an ordinance, got all that stuff in it. I'd love to see it.
Let's let Mr. Phillips finish.
Well, it sounds like Mr. Cole's ready to move forward, so I'm done.
I think he's endorsing it, the way it sounds to me, yeah.
Oh, I don't think you ever see him come up with an ordinance that has all those standards in it.
Okay.
Mr. Rogers.
He's always fought those standards. So.
My question is, he started out with his dissertation just then about it's going to be, why are we doing this? It's more open space, cheaper construction.
Hey, give me your mic.
My concern was, he answered the questions I had as he just gave his dissertation about why we were doing it. He said more open space and it created more affordable living in the county. But if all those things you just said were in the ordinance, it might be appetizing with them.
Yeah, because all this affordable housing with all this higher density, it's never occurred, gentlemen. It's a pipe dream. It sounds good on paper, but it really doesn't, actually happen in real life, because the marketplace is something different out there. And unless we force them to make these homes affordable, you'll not get them. So we're not getting affordable housing, and we're getting open space, but it's the definition. It depends on how you define it. So
in terms of if something like this is, if the legal staff is asked to put something together, it would be helpful for us to know whether the intent is to have it go to the commission for consideration and approval, or whether council wants it to come to council, which is a longer process, because when you start writing this, you got to write it one way or the other.
No, I think anything should go to planning and zoning. We appoint them to help us with these decisions, and they have to operate under these ordinances. I think they ought to have some input. They're very,
it would be just like a zone change.
Yeah, I think they do a good job. I don't think any reason to exclude them in the process.
But what I'm not sure that I'm clear on your response, Mr. Cole. In the end result, if the council adopted this idea, would you want the Planning and Zoning Commission to have the sole say over whether or not they get the density bonus and get multifamily?
Oh, no, I don't know. I think that decision should be with county council. Well, but I think as we develop the ordinance, I thought that's what you meant. Should it go to, a public hearing process?
No, I was just trying to figure out whether I would be writing something to amend the subdivision ordinance or writing something to make it a conditional use. It's a totally different approach.
Jim, I think when you have an area that may have primarily single-family homes, if it's zoned AR, which is single-family homes, and it's older areas and there's a piece of ground that's stuck in the middle of all this stuff, for us to go in and allow planning and zoning or a developer to come in and make an application and get multifamily in an area, and then the people around us, hey, what's happening, and then have no way to speak out against it and oppose it. No, I don't think we ought to be changing the character of neighborhoods and
well,
and
they
areas.
Can have, they have hearings at the commission.
Yeah, but I know how those hearings work versus our hearings. I think it ought to come to us for those kind of decisions.
That's
like a conditional use.
That's Mr. Cole's opinion. I, to the contrary, believe that it should be in the form of our current cluster subdivision process. We have changed our appeal process so that if planning and zoning were to approve it as a cluster subdivision with a density grade provision, they can appeal to the county council, and that's really the only time that I think we need to look at it. Mr. Cole repeatedly says that planning and zoning are the experts. I don't know why in this case we won't want to.
Where did I say they're experts? I just said that they are called the Planning and Zoning Commission to give us recommendations. I think we ought to give them the opportunity to give us recommendations.
Okay, Mr. Rogers, did you finish?
Yes, I
okay, Mr. Jones, you comments?
Well, I have to agree that some of the things advanced are at least worth looking at. I'd like to see something, on paper from that you could actually read and see and, as a draft. And I'd also like to see what, if Eddie and you guys could put something together, because certainly you guys have to work out, is it going to be a conditional use? Is it going to be, where is it, what is it going to shake out to be? And if it's a conditional use that it's going to legally have to be, then it's going to have to come in front of council. That decision's already made, and we won't have to make it. Or if it's not, then we'll have to make that decision. So I'd like to say that certainly move forward and at least look at everything, when it's actually written in ordinance for.
The difficulty is that the subdivision ordinance works around subdivision, not multifamily use. There's no reference at all to multifamily.
Well, I see, and I think that's certainly, as I said, that's between you legal staff, and you guys are going to have to shake that out to see where it's going to fall.
It makes it a more intensive effort to amend an ordinance that only talks about single family lots, because you got to go back into the definitions and clear that the ordinance is taking on a broader scope.
If they were a mechanism in the subdivision regulation creating lots, then it almost makes it have to be a townhouse type unit.
We ought to only do this. We only do this on the western side of the county.
Okay, I agree. I would. I'd be willing to look at it. I think the consensus is that have legal staff to draw up something and bring it back for further discussion before maybe it's finalized. But
Dale, they should. Dale, I think have he had said it could have all this. Could have all these standards. I want to see something with some standards. Otherwise, we've got nothing but increasing density and changing the single family to multifamily, and you're going to have a lot of people irate and have nowhere to turn. So I think the ordinance ought to have some standards and something in it. Something you hang your hat on.
Of course. And again, I'm the one who put forth that, and I'm more than happy to bring those standards forward. Again, I think a lot depends, though, on the multifamily component, because by using less land, it gives the developer greater options to provide buffers, provide landscape amenities. But if you're going to just say multifamily is not appropriate, then you really limit your ability to do some of these creative things. I'd like to ask staff to bring both options forward. Really, until we see both options, it's going to be hard for the council to decide which is appropriate, maybe which isn't.
You mean an option that would expand the subdivision ordinance and one that would put it into conditional uses?
See, my preference is that both are done. I think we need it as a cluster option under certain standards, but then I think we can't continue to give away added density through either change of zones or conditional uses or RPCs if they want to go that route.
Cheers.
Can I get a fire extinguisher down here? His pants are on fire.
Nobody pay attention to it.
Do you understand, Mr. Griffin?
So you're saying broaden it, Mr. Phillips, to more than just the cluster?
Well, of course, again, the cluster I think is very important, because it's an option that we can create standards for. Everyone will understand it only applies to the development district. But then we still don't want to give developers the option to come in under a conditional use or a change of zone and get higher density without having to pay for it. So I think the two need to go hand in hand. Now, the council may only in the end adopt one of them or neither of them or both of them, but
how do we force them to go into these ordinances when they make applications, to take that route as opposed to the route that we've been doing all these years?
If you don't think they'll do it, I don't know why you're so concerned about us.
I mean, what would be the incentive to do it?
Economics.
Well, no, wait. Right. They would pay for it here. They get it free here. Why wouldn't they take the route they would get it free?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We need to make sure that they can't get it free in the future. That's why it's important that we not only do it through the cluster, but we also...
And we have to. Wouldn't we have to void all these other avenues that allow them to go take a path to get it for free, like the change of zone or the conditional use, close it off to them? I mean, how do you do it?
I know you're reading the Washington Times. You should be listening to the discussion.
I'm trying to.
As I just said, we want to put this in ordinance form that would make them pay for increased density across the board.
We can't do that. How would we do that, Jim? Is there a possible way that we... Do we have to eliminate all these other ordinances, or wouldn't a person have an opportunity to take the standard route that we have today?
Well,
and we have this new ordinance. I mean, you have a choice. You pay for it here, or you get it free here.
I'm listening to the discussion.
But I'm saying, where is the incentive to make them go and pay for density?
Well, that's not my call about what the incentive is. But
I'm still trying to figure that one out.
But from the point of view of the person who might be asked to prepare something, it sounds like what Mr. Phillips is saying is make it possible to have multifamily through the cluster and also as a conditional use, two ways, as opposed to one or the other?
Absolutely. I'm saying anytime they increase density, they're going to have to understand there's a fee that is going into a conservation fund to preserve open space elsewhere in the county. And no longer are we going to just give developers higher density because they've got a good attorney or a great land use consultant or a slick presentation. We've done that for 30 years. I can't imagine how many millions of dollars we've lost and basically have transferred that wealth to the pockets of landowners and developers who find themselves in that fortunate position.
Well, you're scary.
I guess if we make it possible to do it through the cluster subdivision, which would only go to the commission, nobody's going to file for a conditional use because they would get it done quicker through the cluster. It's only 3 weeks versus a year, so.
That's probably why they're willing to pay for it.
Well, I don't know that it's a need to make it possible to do it both ways. But you're never going to find anybody who's going to say, I'll take a year to do the same thing I can get done in 3 weeks.
Well, only through the cluster would only apply to the development district. There may be other areas that an applicant comes in that we feel should have the option to do a conditional use outside of a development district.
Okay.
Well, we're working on the changing of the land use plan. Let's just see if we can throw it into the mix and hash it out with that instead of trying to look at it separately right now, because that is a big land use issue, and we're looking at the land use plan. So let's give it to the consultant, see if they can massage it and make it sound like it makes sense, because they might understand it. Doesn't that make sense? Dale, we're paying them a lot of money. I
think we could run it by him, see if he wants to, how he could include it in the land use plan,
Well, wouldn't that be the best? I mean, I don't know. Finley, Lynn, what do you think? We're working on a land use plan with consultants.
I told you my decision to keep moving in the beginning.
Yeah, I'll be getting to the land use consultant. If we're going to
I mean, as far as
like
I told you, I'd like to see it on paper with our legal staff doing it. That
yeah, but wait. Which, now, the question is, Finley.
My question was, said the answer was that I said in the beginning that I would like the legal staff and Lawrence to do
so
something.
So you don't think the consultants should be looking at it?
So
I guess that's the answer.
You should see it. You should be able to see it. Let's pin this thing down. Are you talking about both options here or one option versus the other? Which way is Mr. Griffin supposed to write this thing?
I think at this particular time, Mr. Phil, I would, you're looking at two different versions. One could deal with conditional use, and one could deal subdivision ordinance. Is that correct, Lawrence? Am I saying that right? Do you understand that?
Well, it sounds like it would be through the cluster ordinance if it's in a development district, and it would be through the conditional use procedure if it's outside the development district. Am I hearing that correctly?
That is the distinction,
okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, but as Mr. Cole asked, what incentive is it for them to come in and ask for conditional use? There's got to be an incentive for them to be able to come in and fast-track it, or if they're going to pay this $15,000 or $20,000 per
unit,
there's got to be some benefit for them to do it, or we're wasting time even discussing it.
Well, we could certainly look at the point of adoption and an acceleration clause similar to what we've done with the moderate price housing initiative. If they're going to be dumping millions of dollars into the county for preservation programs, I don't see any reason why we couldn't bump them to the front of the line.
Straighten us out, Mr. Lang.
Well, I went back to my notes, because this came up either in one of the workshops or it came up in one of the public hearings in the last month. And my notes were, the discussion was to include multifamily, townhouse, duplexes in the cluster trade section of the code. It also was to include an expeditious action if a person applied for a cluster trade option. It was discussed in this, like within the last month or less, probably less than that. I just can't remember which project it was, or if it was at one of the land use plan workshops. So there was a reference to expeditious action. Right. So it would have to be included in the document.
Right.
So as an incentive, we would expedite, an option would be we would expedite the process.
Yeah, we would expedite the process if they applied. Yeah.
Right.
And they would they still come to the council?
Well, it depends on which way it has to be done. I also noted that there was a question, change may be questioned since AR only permits single family.
Right. Okay.
That's where the conditional use.
If it goes under subdivision boards, it would only go to PNC. If it goes under conditional use.
And remember, gentlemen, people go buy houses in the AR district many times because they like the idea that it's going to be single-family homes and, and large lots, and it has a certain feel about it, Dale. It's called the AR district. And
called sprawl.
Well, Isaac's Glen and that place west of Del Mar, those are classic examples of urban sprawl where you allow large developments out in your agricultural district outside your development district. If that's not urban sprawl.
Now, these are all only going to be in the development district.
Right.
Okay.
Do you have a problem if we refer this to the land use consultant, at least ask them their opinion on this?
No problem.
Can I ask?
That's especially the ordinances.
I'd like to have discussions with our legal staff and Mr. Katz and maybe come back with a framework in a few weeks. It's not going to be a full-blown, lock-solid ordinance that we can vote on, but we can talk about the standards, we can talk about the process. Just give me a couple weeks and I'll have
I think that would be good. Okay. Put some standards in place for Mr. Cole and the rest of us to see before Mr. Griffin spends a lot of time in drafting an ordinance. Let's do a grassroots movement on it.
We'll get input from our
Dale, last thing. Did you hear what Lawrence just said, that the consultants we have, their specialty is doing ordinances? Did you say that?
We need to give them our thoughts so they can write
everything by them.
Let's get it.
And I can't believe we're not trying to give it to the consultants who we're paying big money for.
I think I just suggested that a while ago, okay. Mr. Cole. I think that we should let's get a rough draft, and then we'll go through Mr. Driscoll. You already see.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go. Next item.
Okay. Next item is the county administrator's report, and the first item is recorder deeds information systems improvements. The Sussex County Information Systems Department has worked with the recorder deeds and its contractor, ACS, to provide county-maintained and operated hardware for the recorder deeds office. They have completed work that will enable recorder deeds records to be stored on county servers, added recorder deeds to the new county phone system, and provided more public terminals for information access for title searchers and the public. We would like to thank Mr. Eddie Sparpaglione and the Information Systems Department for their hard work that brought about this change and these improvements. And the next item is the Sussex County Advisory Committee for Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities. They are meeting on March 19th, and a copy of their agenda is included. They will be reviewing a senior transportation study and information regarding fees for transport of patients. The meeting will be held at the West Complex at 10 a.m. Next is beneficial acceptance. The Engineering Department has granted beneficial acceptance to the following projects. Seagrass Plantation was granted on March 5th. Developer is Syntex Homes, and it's located on County Road 348 in the Holtz Landing Sewer District, consisting of 51 single-family lots. Forest Landing Phase 1 granted beneficial acceptance on March 5th, and the project is located at the intersection of Road 368 and 84 in the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District. Eagles Point, Section 2, granted beneficial acceptance on March 8th. The project's located on Shady Road in the West Rehoboth Expansion in the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District, consisting of 13 townhouse buildings. Rehoboth Crossing, previously the Ames Plaza redevelopment, is granted beneficial acceptance also on March 8th, and it's located on Route 1 northbound in the West Rehoboth Expansion in the Dewey Sewer District, consisting of 147-unit townhouse development. The last item, Michael M. Moore. It is with deep regret that we note the passing of Michael M. Moore, a Sussex County employee for the last 25 years. Mr. Moore worked as a Planner 1 in the Planning and Zoning Department, and then in the Engineering Department as a Technician, Utility Construction Technician 2, and Public Works Technician 2. We will certainly miss Mr. Moore and wish to express our heartfelt sympathy, especially to his wife and son. Thank you.
Mr. Godwin.
Mr. President, members of council, this evening we have three agreements for your consideration. The first one is Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Ashley Manor Phase 1 agreement number 539. In this case, the developer is Mr. Mario Capano of Newark, Delaware. The location is Route 20 north of Route 54, and this will be in the Fenwick Island Sanitary Sewer District, servicing 22 townhouses. The system connection charges total $94,006. We already have approval from our engineering department and the State Department of Natural Resources. We're expecting 20 days of construction and an construction administration and construction inspection costs totaling $13,472.40. The projected construction cost for this project will total $89,816. The supporting motion is worded as follows. Be it moved that based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department for Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Agreement Number 539, that the Sussex County Council execute a construction administration and construction inspection agreement between the Sussex County Council and the Beezer Homes Corporation for wastewater facilities to be constructed in the Ashley Manor Phase 1 on-site located in the Fenwick Island Sanitary Sewer District.
So moved.
I have a motion by Mr. Jones, second Mr. Phillips, to approve agreement 539. Just read by Mr. Godwin. Any questions? Now, Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried.
Second wastewater agreement for your consideration this evening is Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Agreement Number 539-2. Again, the developer is Mr. Mario Capano of Newark, Delaware, at Routes 20 north of Route 54. In the Fenwick Island Sanitary Sewer District, this will service 39 townhouses and one community building. The system connection charges total $170,920. We do already have approvals from our engineering department and the Department of Natural Resources. We're expecting 32 construction days. The construction administration and construction inspection costs will total $22,315.35, with a proposed construction cost of $148,769. Supporting motion reads as follows. Be it moved that based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department for Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Agreement Number 539-2, that the Sussex County Council execute a construction administration and construction inspection agreement between Sussex County Council and Beezer Homes Corporation for wastewater facilities to be constructed in Ashley Manor Phase 2, located in the Fenwick Island Sanitary Sewer District.
So moved.
Again, a motion by Mr. Jones, second Mr. Phillips, to approve the motion, agreement 539-2. Just read Mr. Godwin. Any questions on the motion? Being none, Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried.
Gentlemen, the third and final wastewater treatment agreement for your consideration this evening is Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Hopkins Pettyjohn Subdivision on site, North Pump Station only, agreement number 446. In this case, the developer is Mr. David Wangle, ADC Builders of Ocean City, Maryland. The location is northeast of intersection Route 9 and Routes 261. This will be contained in the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District, comprising of one pump station and 15 single-family lots. The sewer connection charges will total $58,665. We do again have approvals from our engineering department as well as the Delaware Department of Natural Resources. We're expecting 43 construction days, a construction administration, and construction inspection costs totaling $87,785.25, with a proposed construction cost of $585,235. And the supporting motion reads as follows. Be it moved that based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department for Sussex County Project Number 81-04, Agreement Number 446, that the Sussex County Council execute a construction administration and construction inspection agreement between Sussex County Council and ADC Builders for wastewater facilities to be constructed in Hopkins Pettyjohn Subdivision on site North Pump Station only, located in the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District.
So moved.
Second.
Again, I have a motion by Mr. Jones, second Mr. Phillips, to approve the motion driven by Mr. Godwin, agreement number 446. Any questions on the motion? Being none, Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried.
Gentlemen, we also have three disbursements from your annual municipal police department grants for your consideration. The first one is from the town of Blades. They're requesting $24,616.26 from their annual grant. If you'd like to do these all together, I can read you all three of them. The second town asking for a disbursement is the town of Dagsboro. For police station renovations, they would like to draw their entire grant of $25,000 at this time. And the third and final town asking for a disbursement is the town of Ocean View, Grant B, which would be for various equipment and new police station in the amount of $15,874.02. All three of these towns do have this money available as a balance remaining for this year's grant program.
So moved, Mr. President.
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Jones, second by Mr. Phillips. Motion just read by Mr. Godwin. Questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Godwin. Carol Fitzgerald.
Good evening. A little over 2 years ago, the state library hired consultants to take a look at libraries throughout the state, looking at their facilities and services. As a result, these consultants presented a master plan that included libraries of various sizes in the state and addressed them as community libraries, regional libraries, and anchor libraries. In August of 2005, our county administrator, Mr. Stickles, hosted a countywide meeting with trustees, friends, and the county council to hear a summary of this report. And at that time, the state librarian agreed to have the consultant look further into more detail at libraries in Sussex County. During this time, we looked at the libraries and also at an possibility of an anchor library as a joint use facility with the Dell Tech Library. Tonight's presentation is for information only. We are not coming in asking for funding or the implementation, but we want to provide you with some information and education to introduce you to this concept of a possible joint use library. The consultant, Dick Waters, will talk about this and will tell you about some in other areas. This is just one possibility as we look at how we can improve libraries throughout Sussex County as well as throughout the state in improving our services and our facilities and helping to improve the quality of life in here in Sussex County. I have with me tonight Annie Norman, who is the state librarian, who will introduce the consultant, Dick Waters. Yes.
Question. Georgetown, are they still going ahead with their library?
Yes, they are.
So what will this be, another one?
Well, what I'd like you to do is hear what this possibility would be. That's why it's only information. We are not suggesting we do it. We are suggesting that this is something that in the long term, there may be a time when this would be something that would be beneficial. That's why I'm saying it is for education and information only.
Save the state library system the money too.
They funded this. But I'd like to introduce the state librarian, Annie Norman.
Thank you. I think Carol set the stage very well for this, and I will reiterate this is informational purposes only. I'm asked that question many times at the state level is, what if? What if we pulled resources from the state, the county, local, into a joint facility? Could there be economy of scale savings if we work together? So the Georgetown Library and Dell Tech Owens work with us on this project for exploration. None of us are actively pursuing this, but they did participate in exploring the concept. We, perhaps because of your population growth, you might find this information useful at some point in the future. I would like to introduce the consultant that we've worked with, Dick Waters from Providence Associates.
Mr. Dukes.
Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen of the council, and Carol and Annie, thank you. I'm Dick Waters, and the consultant for this joint use library concept design study. It started with a meeting at the college that involved these people, including Dr. Smith, who's the campus director, the librarian at the college, as well as Ms. Norman, Mr. Pillows, Carol Fitzgerald, and myself. We submitted a proposal to develop this conceptual plan for modifying the Dell Tech library to see if it could become a joint use library that would effectively serve both the general public and the community college. The study was held, or the charrette was held, in late September of last year. You see there the people who participated in the charrette process. We started with the brainstorming session, and these are some of the perceived benefits of a joint use library: sharing of staff and operational cost, collaborative collection development, expansion of the customer base, expanded hours of service, the potential for state funding, and the accessibility of the college location. At the same time, 43 design goals were identified, and we won't list them all, and I won't read this list to you, but you can see they range from the efficient delivery of service to additional conference rooms to always the all-important additional parking. This is the existing Betts Library as it stands today. It's got a total of 28,000 square feet plus the museum on the first floor, so a grand total of not quite 31,000 square feet of space. We presented three concepts at the final presentation of the charrette. Concept B2 was a two-story addition to the existing Betts Library. Concept B3 was a three-story addition, and A2 was an all-new two-story library, which would be placed in front of the Betts Library on what is now yard space. Following the presentation, the group determined that the three-story addition was not viable, and that was put aside. So A2 and B2 were the favored concepts. The college preferred B2, the expansion, the two-story expansion of the Preston Library, and that's what we want to briefly present to you this evening. This would be a floor plan, so the orange shaded is the existing library, and the white shaded would be the new library addition. These design concepts are not intended to be architectural and say this is what the building's going to look like. They're only intended to see if you can have a functional library and how it might operate on a site. This would be the site plan. You see the existing library in blue, the future expansion, and getting close to the existing Arts and Science Center, and you see where current parking is there at the college. This is the first floor plan with the college building on the right and the library addition on your left in the red, blue, colors. You see some in the existing library to be part of the proposed joint use library. The second floor would extend the length of the current Betts Library and would obviously be part of the two-story addition. So all of that blue space primarily means what we know as adult services. So when all was finished, B2 would have 52,000 square feet of space distributed as follows. A little bit of renovation of the existing library, and the bulk of it would be the additional space, and about an equal amount on the second floor, so the total of the 52,128 feet. This concept would increase the total library space by a little over 23,000 square feet, or about an 85% increase. It also provides the college on the first floor with 11,000 square feet of space that it could use for some other purposes, additional classrooms, office spaces, anything that it wanted to do. The estimated cost, with about 18 months of inflation put into it at the time we developed this, was a total of about $21.6 million. And that includes about $1.75 million for the renovation of the first level of the Betts Library, which would really not be part of the overall library cost. Now, the anchor concept, as Ms. Fitzgerald indicated, was introduced to the state in the statewide plan. And the recommendation was that it will be the largest type in every sense of a public library or a joint use library in the state. It's recommended there be at least one anchor library in each of the three counties, and the more populated counties may well have 2 to 4 anchor libraries within the 20-year time frame of the recommendations of the statewide plan. It's intended to raise the level of public library service for all of Sussex County, all of Delaware, if you will, provide supplementary services. And that's a key word, supplementary services to other libraries, and provide depth of resources and services that are, frankly, physically not possible in any of the existing libraries in Sussex County or in Kent County, for that matter. But we're talking primarily about Sussex County. There were questions about money. How's it going to be paid for? Concern that it would drain away money from existing libraries, particularly the independent. And somewhat lesser concern about the loss of business to the anchor library. Ms. Norman is on record as saying that she is supportive of the anchor concept, provided it would not result in a funding loss for any type of existing library in Sussex County. So the recommendations for the anchor library in Sussex County, if it were a standalone facility, is this amount of staff, 21 positions, 20 of which are full-time, a combined weekly staffing hour of not quite 700, and a payroll cost of a little short of $500,000. If there was a joint-use library combining public library and college staff, the combined cost would be $1.2 million. The college share would be $500,000. The county share would be $382,000 for the combined staffing hours of 828. So there would be some real savings. Georgetown, at the time of the charrette, was on record as being supportive of the anchor concept and would like their library to be that. The one that they have planned will not be large enough to meet the statewide plan guidelines for an anchor library. There are others around the country, in Colorado, in Florida, in Indiana. The operating budget for the anchor library, a little over $1 million. The budget would put about $1.4 million. A reduction of $375,000 if it was a joint use library, so there is some real savings there. Now, very briefly, there have been 4 or 5 studies done recently in South Carolina, in Florida, in Washington State, and in Ohio. All have indicated that an investment in public libraries has a real return. In South Carolina, for instance, for every dollar invested in public library, there's an economic value of $4.48. In Florida, it's $6.54 for every dollar invested in public libraries. Southwestern Ohio, the most recent study done, about $3.81 return for every dollar spent for public library service. The Gates Foundation has done the most recent national study of public opinion about libraries, and more than 6 in 10 of the people surveyed strongly agree that public libraries are essential for maintaining a productive community. In Sussex County, during the statewide plan, here's what people told us in a telephone survey that the University of Delaware administered. These are the desirable services that people in this county would like to have. Here's what they said about tax support for improved services. Now, some people think, well, the computer, the internet, hasn't that rendered libraries obsolete? I mean, who's going to the library anymore? Well, nationally, you see in the last 2 years, over 50% of the libraries have had an increase in usage. And in Sussex County in 2004, 73% had an increase over the previous year. And in 2005, which is the last statewide data available, 53% of the libraries were busier than they were the preceding year. Now, a joint-use library will be a significant undertaking. There is no question about that. But here are the benefits. 21 and a half hours of additional service for college students, 50 hours additional service per week for residents of Georgetown and the surrounding area, and we think the surrounding area would reach out about 10 miles. Significant increase in resources, dedicated spaces for services to children, teens, and certainly improved technological capabilities. Funding would be a three-part responsibility: state aid, college funds, and Sussex County fund, and certainly there could be private funding. The library in Indiana, for instance, received over $2 million in private funding for their joint use library. We do not underestimate the difficulty of convincing everyone that this is a viable alternative, but we think the leadership that this county has exhibited that it is doable, and that's what we believe. And if you have any questions,
I appreciate you.
I'm happy to answer them.
I appreciate you coming tonight and bring us up to date on this, but I thought Carol said we weren't going to be asked for money.
We're not asking for money. We're only giving you information.
You are a few years too late. This body suggested this a few years ago before Georgetown decided to build the library, that we should do a joint venture with the college. And it's taken the state this many years to catch up and decide this is the way to go. Now Georgetown's going to build theirs. I don't know why we need a $21 million another library this close to Georgetown here. And now if Georgetown wasn't going to build theirs, that's another story. But I think you're going to be hard pressed to get the county to come up with $500,000 a year, or whatever you're asking for, to fund something that should have been done years ago. You're just a few years late getting started.
Well, it's Miss Norman. I appreciate that. It's Miss
Norman.
I'm
going to be quite honest with you.
Oh, I certainly appreciate that, sir. As Miss Norman indicated, this is presented this evening as part of a long-term recommendation. The time may come as your county grows, and as we've listened to your discussions earlier this evening, certainly there is growth, and every time I've been to Sussex County, I've seen new houses sprouting up. It will not be inconceivable that sometime in the period there will need to be more than one library in Georgetown and need to be one very large library, and the way we think to do that would be in cooperation with the college.
Well, I thank you for coming, and if the state wants to put $21 million in it, the state can do what they want. They've got, I guess, more money than we do. I'm not sure. It depends on who you talk to and what department you're talking to. But any other councilman got any comment? If not, we'll thank him for coming. We have a long agenda tonight.
My only opinion is that I have to agree with Mr. Dukes. It looks like we're getting one more library. It's going to cost us $400,000 a year. And the kitty is XYZ dollars right now. And either all the libraries are going to have to take a cut, which they're not going to do. I can tell you that right now. So, you know, I have to be, if Georgetown wasn't building, they got their two-thirds away or half, 50% of their money's there to a very large building on Pine Street, I might have to say yes. But every town has a library. So I appreciate you. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you for your attention. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Lank. You should suggest that.
Gentlemen, we have a reconsideration of Seacoast Investment LLC's Alm House subdivision application under the moderately priced housing ordinance. Question for you this evening. On February 20, 2007, Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on a subdivision called Alm House or Alms House. An 81.8 acre parcel proposing 163 lots with a density of 1.99 units per acre under the cluster ordinance, providing for central sewer and central water on site at that time. And during the public hearing, there was a question raised about whether this land qualified for consideration as part of a